Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Erica.
Yes.
Yeah, I hear you now. Erica Sandor.
Hi.
Where? What city are you in?
I'm in Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, okay. I got a friend who's out there.
Yeah.
Not Cleveland, one of the outskirt cities.
Sure.
Yeah, he's a pastor of a church there. Dale Patrick, if you're watching, giving you a shout out.
Hi, Dale Patrick.
So I wanted to pull up your Instagram feed because Leslie shows me, she's like, here's who you're talking to today. And I immediately felt bad for not going to the gym this morning.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was a good guilt though. You know what I mean? It's that good.
Sure. Like, it's a motivating guilt.
Yeah. So first off, how are you today? What's going on today with you?
Oh, how am I today? I'm mixed with amazing emotions. So I got injured a couple of weeks ago. I had a hairline fracture on my rib and I pulled something. I was at a tournament in Mexico and I think I did it while I was serving and I was in the middle of my match and I had to withdraw in the middle of my match because of my rib. And so when I came home, you know, I did the x-rays and it wasn't enough and they had to do the CAT scan. So today is my first day back on the tennis court in the last couple of weeks because I was completely laid up. So I feel like a little kid in a candy store being able to be back on the tennis court and out here. And I literally just finished right now before I came on here. So I'm in my tennis mode right now. I'm in my most authentic self that makes me the happiest and fills my soul.
Nice. I like that. That's good. It's taken me a minute to settle into that person.
That's okay.
Here. Once we've gotten on here.
Sure.
Because I've had to wear a couple different hats today.
That's okay.
And then I finally got this hat on, but you can't see it, but it's a bowler hat.
I would love to be able to see you because I feel like I'm talking to myself and it's really weird because all I see is myself when I'm talking and I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, you are talking about yourself, talking to yourself.
Yeah, I literally, it's like talking in a mirror, so it's quite profound. Because I know I'm about to tell a story, and I literally feel like I'm standing in front of a mirror talking to me about me. So it's.
Well, I want to read your post, what you posted today, or was it today that you posted this, regarding the injury, right? Here in recovery, you found this. You know, you've refound purpose in playing tennis and working out and mind over matter. And then you injure. And that's kind of like the one thing that you've had. And so you had to kind of one of the things you said on here, which was that you could get up and brush your teeth. You could take a shower. You could be a mother, a wife, a daughter and a friend. They could still be all these other things. And before, in active addiction, I mean, I guess it's pretty hard to see the good in a situation like what you just got through facing.
So what I was describing when I wrote that, I mean, I could feel it as I'm talking to you. So I remember when I was first getting sober and I was laid out. And I remember, you know, laying down, first of all, was a big deal because in my addiction, I never laid down. I never stopped unless I fell out. So laying down and being so dead inside and dead to the world and an exhaustion that you can't even explain, where you can't lift your arms up, you can't lift your head up and you're so hungry and so tired and the eyes just don't open the right way. And when I got injured and I was laying in bed and I felt so much pain, I had a moment where I got up and I went to the bathroom and I was like, I could still go to the bathroom. And I correlated that with when I was getting, when I was first getting sober and I couldn't get up and I couldn't go to the bathroom, you know? And then I was, the next thing was my breath smells and I was like, oh, I'm going to go brush my teeth. And I was able to brush my teeth, you know? And the next thing I realized, I looked at myself in the mirror and I had energy. I was okay to go do the things that I still did every single day that I've worked so hard for. And it was this amazing moment for me where I was like, oh my God, you know, just because I'm injured doesn't mean I'm high, I'm withdrawing, I'm just injured. And I can still do all the other things that I could do because I've never experienced this in recovery. So it was amazing. I was in such a, my spirits were so genuinely high. You know, I was excited that I could walk into my kids' room. My kids were there. I could sing to my kids. Like, and even though I was hurting and I shouldn't have been walking, I was able to still do all that stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Absolutely. Let me see. I'm going to try and pull this up. I think you can put it on. Yeah, the one right in front of me. All right. So we're, I'm showing your Instagram feed here with my fat sausage fingers. And so this is you working out here. And I wanted to show, there's this one of you on the ball. And kind of balancing. If anyone works out and you see, you're watching this, you know how difficult this is right here. And then he's throwing tennis balls at you. So no big deal.
So, I wish, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. What do you say?
No. I really want to hear what you have to say.
Well, this is what's interesting to me is we're, you know, somebody once told me that us addicts and alcoholics are extreme humans, right?
Yes.
We are. We live in extremes, and my sponsor always says that middle ground is that thing I see when I'm doing a backflip, right? And so, you know. It's not enough for me to just do a podcast or talk to other addicts and alcoholics. We have to, you know, set up cameras and go live and, you know, hire people and rent studio space because, you know, we're extremists, we're extreme humans. And so I kind of see that living in you here.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your story. So you mentioned you're a mother and a wife. So what's your life like today? Just tell me what are some of the promises that have come true in your life today?
Okay. So, I mean, it's so much more than, just saying I'm, you know, a mother and a wife and a pro tennis player. You know, I own two companies, the work that it has taken to get to be a mother again. I lost full custody of my children, and the testing and the accountability that I needed to do to thine own self be true to be able to be a mother again was unbelievable. You know, I had to do weekly drug tests for over a year. I was doing it for years, the drug testing, but when I really got honest with myself, because at first, you know, the drug testing, I was doing everything I could to fake the tests. So I remember when I had my first clean drug test, and they weren't just doing the urine test in front of somebody. I mean, they would have to take my clothes off and they would look inside me, you know, every single week. And I had to do monthly hair tests that would go all the way back, you know, months and months and months to see when was the last time that I used, you know, I was arrested. I had four, I'm going to go to a different spot real quick, just because I have people coming on the tennis court here. I'm trying to think where I can go. Okay. So, I was arrested in four different counties. So I was on probation. I had to go monthly to four different probation officers, and it was a process. you know, and then I had to go to a facility to see my kids with a supervisor. And then I finally was able to have them come to my house with a supervisor. No, first I got to go to Panera with a supervisor for an hour every other week. And then it became at my house. I remember when they were able to come over to the house for the first time for a 2-hour visit with a supervisor. So it was an unbelievable process. And I remember the day that I was in court and fighting, you know, for my life and for the children. And I earned the right. The most important thing I want to talk about, you know, with being the mother part, I remember that I was at my therapist, who I still see because I'm still doing the same things that I've done my first day getting sober. Mm-hmm. And I was at my therapist and I said, I'm ready. You know, I'm great. I'm ready to get my kids back. We have court coming up. And he looked at me and he's like, no, you're not. You know, you still need to go through things. You know, you're only, you know, a year sober. And at that time, and he said, you're not ready. You know, wait, you know. And I remember 6 months had gone by and I'm really doing rigorous honesty with myself. I mean, I'm making mistakes after mistakes, you know, and then I'm learning how to be honest with people and myself. And I would have to say things to somebody, you know, I would say something and be like, wait a second, you know, that's not right. Let me try that again. Mm. And just humble myself, you know. Yeah. And I remember there was a moment when I was at my therapist and he said, are you excited? We're going to court. You're getting your kids back. And I remember, and I looked at him and I said to him, I'm not ready yet. I need a little bit more time because I knew I was really working on myself now. Mm-hmm. And I waited. And I remember the day that I went into court and I went with my husband. We were newly married at that time. And it was like going in because I had been on my own now, you know, I was on the streets for a couple of years. And then sober on my own, you know, without the children. And so I went with my husband to court and I remember feeling like I was going to the hospital as if I was about to deliver twins. And then I was coming home with kids again, yeah, learning how to be a mom again.
Yeah.
So it's so much deeper. And then the process of having them come home, you know, and us having that trust with each other and the bond with each other. And I had the whole process was incredible. You know, and yeah, then building the bond with my husband as I'm bonding with myself for the first time, you yeah know, learning how to what loving myself really means. And then I was so selfish, you know, and now I have to suddenly care about two children and a husband and their feelings, you know. So it's so much deeper than, I got my kids back and I have a husband and now, you know,
right,
this is real work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
and who had custody of your kids during that time?
So, the first year that I lost the kids, it was my ex-husband. But now that I'm not sucking all the oxygen out of every single room that I'm in, I was able to see that he wasn't healthy. And mm-hmm my parents, thank God, took custody of the kids for a year also.
Yeah.
While I was getting home, I got my children back. So, they've been home now, I think almost 3 years. Wow. Yeah. So it's, they're home now, you know, yeah. I'm mom. So, and, it was very difficult in the beginning because I had the mom guilt, you know, mm-hmm, so learning how to still say no, because it was healthy for the children, you know, and setting boundaries as I'm learning how to have boundaries for myself. And the cool thing about the mom part of this is that I'm really open with the children about what I'm going through and the mistakes that I'm still making. And they understand that, you know, mommy's still getting healthy mentally while I'm being a mom. You know, yeah, it's a very open household about recovery. It's incredible. it's really awesome, actually. So that's yeah that part, you know, the tennis, so I had made a vision board probably about, I think like 2 years ago. And I thought to myself, how awesome would it be to start playing tennis again? I hadn't played in 15 years. I used to play for Ohio State. And the next day after I made my vision board, I kid you not, I ran into my old tennis coach who I hadn't seen at a Starbucks that he never goes to the day after I made the vision board. So we started playing tennis again. And I grew up with him. He took me all the way to Ohio State. And I was eighth in the nation at the tennis at the time. So I started playing tennis again, and I thought, how awesome would it be to get center court at a Grand Slam, let the world know that you can be 40 in recovery and have a do-over in life. So a couple of months after we were playing, I don't know if you know anything about tennis, but I went to IMG, where Nick Bollettieri is. And
okay. The only thing I know about tennis is it's harder than it looks.
So, well, Nick Bollettieri, he is the number one coach in the world. He, okay. I don't know if you know, like Andre Agassi, Serena Williams, okay. Maria Sharapova, uh-huh. Monica Seles. So he has 10 top Grand Slam winners who he coached. And so I went and they put me on the court with him and they said, listen to this lady's story. You know, let's see if she's coachable and teachable and good enough. You know, being in recovery, you know, being 40 years old and the story, it could be amazing if this could happen. So long story short, they took me on. It's funny because I'm like, this crackhead has a manager right now. I have a manager, I have a team. And so they took me on and about 4 or 5 months ago, I made it to my first pro tournament. So it's funny because you used to Google my name and it would show up my mugshots. You know, because my attorney once said to me, have you ever been arrested? And I'm like, which state? Wow. So, and now when you Google my name for the first time, it shows that I'm a pro tennis player. There's no more mugshots.
Wow.
So my daily activities, as you asked me, you know, 15 minutes ago, was I play about 4 hours a day. I break it up. I play 2 hours with one of my coaches, and then I have match play, and then I have a footwork coach where we do, you know, one day we'll do lifting or we'll do footwork or whatever it is. Right. So it's a total of 5 hours invested in that, and I break it up where I'll wake up in the morning before the family wakes up, because it's very important for me to be able to go to school with the kids. So my husband and I, you know, we have our normal routine with the kids in the morning. It's my favorite part of the day. And we have our breakfast and we both take the kids to school. And then I take, you know, a couple hours for work. Yeah. And then I get on the tennis court again, you know, so, and then I'll work again. We'll go and we'll pick up the kids. And then usually when the kids are about to go to sleep, you know, every night we do our favorite part of the day. And then after we do favorite part of the day, a lot of times I'll read or my husband will read to our youngest one. And then I'll go and I'll play tennis again or I'll work out again. So wow. I split it up. It's a lot, but I make sure that I'm fully present for my kids. I'm not on my phone when I'm with the kids. I'm not anywhere but with the kids. That's because I'm still working through the mom guilt of when I travel at the tournaments now.
So, oh yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a tough one. That guilt. Well, that's amazing. I don't do the same thing every day
right.
at all, but I've had to, it's like what you said earlier, to thine own self be true, right? I had to really accept that about myself to say, it quit judging myself so harshly because I wasn't doing the same exact thing every day. And when I embrace that and know that I need to do certain things every day, and sometimes they need to be in different orders.
Right.
But for you, you've found some strength there in the structure. So you've in a lot of ways, the years that the locusts have eaten, it's been returned to you. And so you're kind of in this place now where you're looking back at the, how much time, clean time or sober time do you have now?
My sobriety date is 7/11 of 2019.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
wait, 7/11, 2019?
I mean, 2017. Just kidding.
2017?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, cause then that's, you'd be like you're like sober in the future.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. So now it wasn't always like this. I have a note sheet here that my lovely wife Leslie put together. It says that you went to 19 different rehabs.
Yeah.
What's up? What's up with that?
So
is your dad in the rehab business? Was he just trying to get that insurance money or?
No, it was definitely genuine. So it started, it's crazy when I think about how many I actually went to. I think that probably a little over half of those rehabs, I really wanted to go. I always wanted to stop.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not one of those people that I wasn't in denial. I knew I had a problem. I knew I had a problem the second that I took my first hit. I was screwed. And, you know, for me, I didn't want to get high anymore. I couldn't stop. And I didn't want to live, but I didn't want to die. And what do you do? And I would go to these rehabs, and I would beg for help. And people would help me. A lot of them I was able to graduate from. So the seed was planted. And I would put together, you know, 2.5 years here, 3.5 years, 4.5 years. But I don't call it mental sobriety. You know, I did everything else to not feel, whether it was gambling or, you know, sex or shopping or an eating disorder, any ism a person could have to get away from being uncomfortable, I did. And I say uncomfortable because I think it's more than just feeling feelings. I think that it's, if anything is just makes me a little, like I said, uncomfortable, without me realizing it, I would stop at anything and anyone to make sure that I felt better.
Right.
And so, you know, and I didn't know that that was the problem also, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, absolutely. I think even in recovery, I'm guilty of that.
And I would do the steps, you know, but then I had all problems. I never looked at myself. You know, I never looked at why people didn't want to be with me or why I wasn't invited to that, you know, or why that person wouldn't share their story with me or their secret, you know. So the rehabs, for me, though, you know, it's interesting. For me now, it's really all about just me being honest with myself and everybody around me. That was the only way I was able to get sober. But I mean, like, really honest, like the ugly honest. Like telling the truth. And the second that I decided to tell the truth to myself that I need help, I can't do this alone. This is what I really done. And I mean, I'm talking about the crazy shit that I think, you know, or that people think that you're going to be damned for life, you know, if you talk about it. I did. I took that risk because I knew that I was going to really die. I was going to lose my kids. I was going to lose now my husband at that time was my boyfriend, who for some reason I cared more about than I don't even understand why. It was God. And I remember going into court and looking at the judge. I'm shaking even saying this because I remember the moment that I got honest and I told the truth.
Yeah.
I told the truth. I told the shit that I did. Ugly. Ugly, horrible things. And it's amazing because the second that I got honest, everybody helped me. Mm-hmm. Everybody helped me. Yeah. I wasn't in trouble. I was already in trouble with myself. And I wasn't what I did. People helped. And people have been helping ever since. And now I want to give back. I so want to give back because I was in so much pain. You know, and now absolutely. I'm not.
Right.
Because I got honest. So.
That's powerful. You know, that honesty, and then it had to come from within. I mean, we were sharing earlier about, you know, back saying something and backing up and going, wait a minute, that's not true. Mm-hmm. I'll say for myself that I've, you know, for me, it's that judgmental mind that's, you know, saying, well, you shouldn't say that or you shouldn't feel that.
Right.
And so that constant filtering and this last go through of the steps that I've been doing this year, I've felt a lot of that filter lift off, which it's scary because it's like, oh, shit. Like sometimes my wife looks at me like, I can't believe you just said that. And I told her this yesterday. I said, babe, these things have been running in my head forever for the last 8 years.
Right.
I'm just finally at a place where I'm beginning to, I think you even say this here, is I'm beginning to like myself, accept mm-hmm. myself. Right. And once I'm start going, okay, I'm okay with who I am. And that's really scary to begin to live your authentic self when so long, you know, drugs and alcohol were a great tool to hiding within, you know, but the true thing is to really be your authentic who you are and ultimately.
And whoever it's, but you know, it's cool. I was sharing with my family the other day at dinner that, you know, I didn't know where I wanted to sit in a movie theater. You know, I didn't know which side of the bed I like to sleep on. Right. I was such a people pleaser. Wow. That, I had no idea what I liked. And I remember going to a movie theater. I went to 3 movies in a row and I sat in 3 different places and I ordered popcorn 3 different ways because I didn't know how I liked my popcorn. I didn't know where I liked to sit and I didn't know what kind of movie I liked. And I went by myself. And now I know where I like to sit in a movie theater. And I know how I like my popcorn. I like it layered in between from the bottom, the middle, and to the top with tons of butter. And I like malt balls on top of it. Yeah. I like to sit in the front at the movie theater where you could put your feet up in the middle.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I know what kind of movies I like. And I can say no, thank you today because people say no to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't die and I don't always have to say yes because I'm trying to please you. What I'm realizing is that I want to give this the respect that it deserves about being selfish. It's not about being selfish. It's about making sure that I'm doing what's right for myself, but right in a way where if it's honest, you know, if it's my motives are pure. You know, my intentions are pure. It's not going to hurt myself or somebody else while I'm taking care of me.
Right.
Because the only way that I can give back to anybody is if I'm okay.
Right.
And the only way I'm okay is if I take time. It's almost like an unselfish time to give to myself that I can give back. But if I don't take that time, I've got nothing. My bucket's empty. You know, so I can't give anything to anybody. And that is so important. And
absolutely.
to be able to get to that place is super cool because then I understand myself. I don't always have to respond to somebody. I don't always have to, you know, and I'm still so new at this. I'm still learning, you know, but in this process of learning it's really humbling.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. And that word humble, like the best description of humility I've heard is self-esteem without the ego.
Yeah.
And I really love that description because, you know, I think so long in our addiction and, you know, that we know we were choosing these bad things, right? We were choosing death every day. And destruction of ourselves, of others, of relationships. And so, you know, that mindset of I am what I do and I am bad. And
yeah, absolutely. Part of this, you are what you eat.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So I want to ask you this. You know, we're just kind of having an honest conversation here, and
sure. Yeah.
Which I appreciate.
Anything.
Yeah. So one thing that I've noticed, and I'd love to know what you think about this is, you know, the forgiveness of the past, right? but then the healing from the past, right?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how you've healed from, you know, like you said, you went to that courthouse and you were 100% honest.
So the way that I'm healing from my past and, you know, for anybody who's listening, I'd like to share this, you know, I was that person drugs for money. And when I got tired of doing that, I found another hustle, you know, and, you know, I drove from, California to Florida without a dime in my pocket. I ate better. I slept better. I did more drugs than I ever did in my life because of humanity. And, that's a whole other story. You know, but I had to learn how to, you know, I stole things. I did horrible, horrible things. You know, I make up these horrible stories that
Oh, we lost her. We're live. We're live in the studio here at Most High Studios.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, a call is coming in. Okay.
So, okay, cool.
Yeah. Technology.
And we're back, folks.
And we're back. Sorry. Sorry. Yeah. So anyway, you know, I would do these horrible, horrible things. And I remember, you know, I was also, you know, beaten and raped and robberies and the whole story, you know. Yeah. And yeah. So there was one thing that I did want to talk about with the forgiveness, the sexual part. People don't talk about this, and I really want to talk about this.
Okay.
So allowing my husband to touch me for the first time, because when I was on the streets, you know, I faked everything. You know, this wasn't pleasing, you know, I didn't know what an orgasm was, you know, on the streets. All I knew is that I wanted to do whatever I could to get the drug as fast as I could and get away from whoever I could so that I could go get high.
Right.
You know, and then when I learned how to be like a normal human being and have a real sexual relationship with somebody, I had not a clue what to do with that. And I remember learning how to trust myself and trust my husband and allow myself to be touched or touch somebody else or touch myself. And I talk about the sexual part of it because it was such a big part of forgiving myself from my past. Mm-hmm. Because I had to learn how to be vulnerable with myself, which is a big deal because on the streets, being vulnerable is not an option,
right.
You know? Being vulnerable and allowing myself to just trust somebody else and not be ashamed or afraid that I'm going to hurt me or he's going to hurt me. When I learned how to have that trust, it allowed me to have trust to start to forgive other things that I did in my past, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it, you know, and, by me being able to be honest with you guys and with my therapist and with the judge and to really talk about, and I wasn't talking about my past in a way that it made me highlight it like, oh, that was so cool. We drove by over there and it was awesome. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about allowing myself to feel like, you know, I remember being in my house and the first winter, and looking outside and seeing the footsteps outside, and I would have fear because I thought it would remind me of when I had a bunch of drug dealers take over my house because I owed them so much money. And just looking at the snow and the footsteps had reminded me something of my past.
Yeah.
But I have the opportunity now to look at those footsteps and see that those are just footsteps. There's not anybody outside my house anymore. That's something else. And slowly I would put together flashbacks that would happen to me and I would face them and I would talk about them. But I have a husband and a very supportive group around me now because I was honest in the beginning, and those people are still my support group. So I can still talk about what I'm going through. Just like what I talked about on Instagram when I was carrying my tennis bag on my back and I was walking up the hill to the car, and it was reminding me of when I walked on the streets. You know, miles and miles, you know, in the hood. So I share this stuff because that's what helps. And to know that this is a real disease. I would never, in my right mind, I would never give up my kids. You know what I mean? I wouldn't do drugs with a child in me if I was in my right mind. I wouldn't steal from somebody. You know what I mean? I wouldn't run away and live in different states, you know, every other day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In my right mind. So I talk about this stuff because I understand that this is a disease and that you can't do this alone.
Right.
And understanding this disease, that when I put one thing in my body and I remember, you know, real quick also, I was living in California at one time and I was living in the penthouse, whatever. And, my boyfriend at the time, he had relapsed after 3.5 years, and I had 3.5 years, and he was smoking crack, and that's my drug of choice. And I went, and I was like, oh, I can do one. Mm. And I could take a Seroquel and, you know, afterwards, and I could wake up in the morning and everything will be fine. I'll go about my business. And because of that one, a year later, just because of that one hit, a year later, I was in Florida smoking crack with cockroaches, living in an abandoned apartment building, sticking needles in my arm.
Right.
Because of the one hit.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, and then, you know, a next round when I was sober again, after a amount of years, I believed that I could have a drink. I wasn't an alcoholic. I was a crackhead, you know, so I could drink. And so I tried that route. And in for me, when I had a drink, I realized that that took me right to crack. It wasn't enough for me, you know, so I'm convinced now that I understand that this is a disease, that I cannot put a mind or mood altering chemical, no matter what it is, inside my body, because I'm a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic. Right.
Yeah.
And I have no control anymore once I put it in me. And I'm not ashamed of that. That's a fact. That's who I am. This person can't put anything in me because I don't become me anymore. I become somebody else. The disease takes over and I can't stop. And I don't ever want to do that to myself again. And now that I understand that, there's no way in the world that I'm going to today that I'm going to do that today.
Right. Today.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and as long as I can do this today, I have a chance later on tonight.
Right. Absolutely. And that resonates with my story as well, because when I first got sober, through a spiritual experience, and I was, you know, for a couple of years, living in sobriety and active in my faith community. And at some point I told myself that it was okay for me to drink again. I had drank a couple times through that time, 'cause I wasn't working a 12 step or a program of abstinence, but every time I drank, I knew, oh, well, I shouldn't be doing this. But at some point, a couple years into that process, I said, it's okay that I drink. And I began drinking beer. And then it was a progress of from a year to about a year later, after I started allowing myself to drink, that we were living in LA and I was doing dope and I was running streets and I was right back at it again, because that's the progress. And so this time, you know, when I committed to this life, you know, I realized that, look, I've ruined it. I can't have a drink. And, you know, the worst thing that could happen is I would have a drink and nothing would happen. Nothing bad would happen.
Right.
That would be the worst case scenario, because then I could maybe hide it, you know, and I could maybe believe that, oh, I'm not completely crazy.
Right.
And it's not the case.
Right.
So, I mean, I think we could keep going on. We try to keep these cut down to about half an hour.
Sure.
But I would love to be able to, you know, connect again and have you tell some more of your story.
For sure. All I would like to do, you know, to anybody that's listening or will be listening, I want to give back the pain and what it took to get sober. I don't wish upon anybody to have to go back out and do it again. And for the people who are afraid to go through that pain, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You have to, you know, it's not easy. But once you get over that, it does something for yourself. It did something for my self-esteem because I did it, you know, I think it's just about honesty. And all I would want to do, you know, anything that I can do to help, anybody who wants to reach out to me, you know, on my Instagram, they can talk to me on it. I'm really, the reason I want to do this, and be number one in the world on tennis, and I'm going to do this, is because I can really help people. You know, I can't believe that God didn't bring me this far to drop me. There's a reason I'm supposed to be here. There's a reason you're supposed to be here. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I just want to give back as much as possible. I have so much love to give. I can't even express it. So anybody who needs it, I'm here. So anything you need.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, if wherever you are listening from, you know, there are solutions out there. You can reach out to us either by direct message. And what's your Instagram handle there?
My Instagram is ErikaSandorZur. So it's Erica Sandor Zur.
All right. And we'll have you, we'll tag you on our Instagram as well.
Please. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
To let people know. And, you know,
anytime, you know, there's so much we can keep going on, especially we dive together. So, you know, anytime, please let me know. You know, there's so many stories, topics that we could do. Anything that I can do to help, I'm here.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being so open and honest and sharing.
Yeah.
And we will. We'll get back to this. And I'd love to keep hearing. And I'll be following your Instagram
feed. Thank you so much.
For daily inspiration to hit the gym. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
This is the Most High Show.
Okay.
We'll check you later.
Have a great day. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.